You're listening to The Stressless Life with Dr. Yip, a podcast about conquering your fears and overcoming anxiety. Our question for the day is, after 12 episodes on OCD, what have we left out? I am your host, Noah Larracy. Let's say hello to Dr. Yip.
Hello, Noah.
Dr. Yip is a licensed psychologist who is board certified in behavioral and cognitive therapy and an expert in the treatment of anxiety and OCD. So our journey into the world of OCD comes to an end today after 12 episodes.
For now.
For now, of course. We'll always have an opportunity to come back. But I guess we want to talk about today is all the stuff that we sort of left out. So this is kind of the B-sides edition, the odds and ends, anything that we haven't been able to cover so far.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing that I know we want to talk about was the idea of nonsense sounds, words, and mm-hmm. colors.
Yes.
So please tell us about this.
People with fears or annoyances with nonsense words or sounds, colors, could be anything such as words that make sense, recognizable words, or it could even be sounds that are unrecognizable, such as a grunt, a tick, clicking with your tongue, snorting with your nose. It could be any of those sounds. And the sounds could have significant meanings. It could mean something good or it could mean something bad, or it could be just this felt sensation that it's just annoying. It's just uncomfortable. So if I can come up with like a metaphor, I always think about when I think about this topic, I'm constantly thinking about Freddy Krueger back in the 80s with his nails, the claws scratching against something, some surface. And that's what it's like if you have an obsession of intrusive nonsense sounds that is annoying. It could be that annoying.
Just to be clear, these sounds are the ones that people actually truly hear.
Yes. They actually hear these sounds. Now, you and I may not hear the sounds. That doesn't mean that the sounds are not occurring. It's just that people with intrusive obsessions about nonsense sounds or words, they are so hyper-vigilant, hyper-focused on these sounds that they are aware of it occurring anytime.
This sound is not one that they're particularly making themselves. It's some sound that they hear in the world
yes.
that we wouldn't notice, but for them is excruciating.
Yes.
So it's like a dog whistle.
Yes, it is. Now, it could be the opposite way too. It could be that they're using the sounds to serve as a compulsion, right? So it could be that they are making this clicking, grunting, snorting, whatever sound in order to undo another intrusive fear, and they're using the sound as a compulsion.
This, I think, occurs a lot when if you spend a lot of time with someone and they maybe will have some sort of habit or noise or thing that they do, it can become incredibly annoying to a point where you get a very visceral reaction to that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But this is almost like that, taking it to the extreme.
Yes.
So how do you see this showing up in some of your patients?
Well, I've had many patients who would initially come in and, for example, with sounds. So I've had a lot of patients who would initially come in to the Renewed Freedom Center with a diagnosis of tics or Tourette's. And they make these sounds or they hear these sounds. And then I come to do the assessment and come to realize that, well, this actually isn't a tick, because a tick, which I hope we'll go over sometime in the future, is something where you are voluntarily making these noise, even though it seems uncontrollable, and they serve really no purpose other than tension relief. Whereas people who have these obsessions of having sounds or hearing sounds, if they're hearing the sounds, it's intrusive, it's unwanted. They don't want to hear the sounds, so they're not intentionally making the sounds. If they are using the sounds for a compulsive reason, the purpose of making that sound is to undo a certain fear. So a lot of people who come in would have these sounds, whether it's a grunting or like a clicking. I've had a patient with slurping sounds that become annoying. So it could be any sounds. And the treatment is still exposure and response prevention.
All right, so we talked about sounds. What about words and colors? Like colors, for instance, how would that show up?
Colors, it could be any color on the rainbow, right? So for example, let's say this red that I'm looking at. Well, this red I cannot tolerate. It's this creamy, burnt-looking red, and I'm okay with that red, that bright red, that big apple red. I'm completely fine with that. However, this creamy, burnt red is so not okay, and because it reminds me of the devil's horn, and that's not okay, and therefore I would become hyper aware of anything that exists with that shade of red. And it could have a superstitious feel to this intrusive fear of the color. And it could be any color on the spectrum. However, again, there is this superstitious feel to it.
So the red is just so unbearable, unendurable to you that you're constantly looking for it everywhere.
Well, I'm not looking for it. It just comes smack in my face, right? I don't want to see this red, and I don't want to experience the red. However, because I am highly in tune with that shade of red, I just can't help when it's smack in my face.
So that would mean that you just notice it everywhere, or you can pick out an even speck of it.
That's right.
In a book, on a bookcase, in a corner.
That's
type.
Right. Okay. Yes, a speck of it on the wall. Oh, that! Look at that dot on the wall. That's the red that I can't tolerate. And again, it could just be something that feels annoying, or it could have some significance to it. It could mean something. And when it means something, it usually has a superstitious, magical quality to it.
To finish off on that, and before we get into the magical, superstitious stuff, well, how do the words show up?
Words can be any type of words. Again, it could serve as an intrusive obsession, or it could be used as a compulsion to gain relief. So let's say the word safe. Let's say I'm using the word safe as a reassurance to feel better. And whenever I experience something that triggers a fear in me, I'm going to use the word safe to feel better. So that word safe serves as a compulsion. Whereas, let's say that the word safe to me just looks weird and looks funny. I don't like the way that the letters are spaced or how that word is spelled. S shouldn't be next to the letter A, and then all four of those letters together just doesn't feel right to me, and it's annoying. And again, the sensation I'm feeling from that word safe is, again, like the claws scratching against that surface. So the word safe in itself can be an intrusive sensation, an intrusive word that I am annoyed by, and that would be an intrusive obsession.
How did these sort of show up in terms of impairing people's lives? In other words, these kind of sound like maybe you could get away with this for a while.
The problem is many of these sounds and words and colors exist in your everyday environment, and there really is no escape to it, you know? A person with these intrusive words, it can initially start with safe, S-A-F-E, and then eventually could evolve to save, S-A-V-E, and then it could eventually evolve to escape, E-S-C-A-P-E, and it could continue on and on, and then eventually it could be, well, any syllable that sounds like this word, it's not okay anymore. So just like how OCD evolves, any nonsense sounds or words or colors or really any of your five senses that are intrusive can evolve to something much bigger and more complex.
You mentioned that this can take on magical or superstitious meanings. It sounds like you're saying that people ascribe some sort of meaning to the color, to the word, to the sound, right?
Yes.
So where do these superstitions come from?
Where does any superstition come from, right? It's man-made. So I can turn anything into a superstitious compulsion or a superstitious belief. So let's say sunflowers over there. I have no connection to sunflowers. I like sunflowers. I like the way that they look. However, let's say one day I'm carrying this sunflower with me and something wonderful happens. Well, now if I have OCD, I'm going to be searching for what was it that's different that made this such a great day, made this wonderful thing happen. Oh, well, I was carrying this sunflower with me. So this sunflower must be good luck. Right? So remember that with fears and superstitions and anything, we are really pairing something that has no value to something that is meaningful, right? So what my brain did was just paired that sunflower to having a good day. And now this sunflower has become my superstitious good luck charm. However, let's say I'm carrying that same sunflower and I get into an accident that day. If I have OCD, my brain will go and think, well, what in the world happened that I got into this accident? What was it that I did differently today? Oh, I carried this sunflower. Sunflower must be bad luck, and therefore I must stay away from sunflowers. Over time, eventually, it might even evolve to, I need to stay away from anything yellow. I need to stay away from all flowers. All flowers are bad. I need to stay away from anything green, anything plant, anything that is a plant. And as you can hear, it can evolve continuously. So the sunflower in itself has no meaning, and we're the ones to subscribe meanings to it, which makes it a superstition.
So to use your example here, I'm curious to see in terms of treatment, like with the sunflower, would you try to then expose the person to the sunflower, or would you try to go back to that initial attempt of them to answer the question, why did I get in the car accident? I need to know why I got into the car accident. I need some sort of an answer. It must have been the sunflower, right? I needed that certainty to that question. So that was the answer that I happened to come up with, and I'm going to hold on to that.
I think this is a two-part question here, right? At the end of the day, people with superstitious fears, their sense of control is not internal. Their sense of control is external. So in psychobabble terms, we call this locus of control. And for people with OCD, they feel like their world is out of control. They feel like that the determinant of whether it was a good day or bad day was something that's external to them. And then they try to gain control of that uncontrollable situation by these superstitious beliefs, when in reality, it's coincidental. There was nothing that said, well, it's the sunflower that actually did it, right? It's coincidental. And people with OCD aren't able to recognize that coincidence. And they're not able to tolerate that, well, if it's a coincidence, it's uncertain. Anything can be a coincidence. So therefore, the treatment initially would be to expose them to that sunflower and to whatever other triggers that initial sunflower has now evolved to. However, then later on, as you get into more depth into the treatment, it's about exposing them to the uncertainty that it could be anything. It could be a coincidence. You're exposing them to that, to the understanding that there is no control here, that it is a coincidence, that it's uncertain, that we have no idea why one thing happens one day and one thing happens differently the next day. And it's to be able to accept and tolerate that reality.
So would this be true then of all OCD is really an attempt to seek reassurance and safety and answers from the environment that is really incapable of providing it?
That would be a general conclusion. In terms of the goal of treatment, it is to be able to accept that there aren't any certainties in life.
Okay, so there are no uncertainties, and in the end, the sort of locus of control, to use your phrase, has to come from inside?
Right, that the locus of control has to come from internal, meaning that you only have control over what you do. You have control over what you do, your behaviors, and how you respond to the environment. You have no control over what type of thoughts you have. You have no control over your emotional experiences. You only have control over how you respond to the thoughts and how you respond to the emotions. So at the end of the day, it's understanding and accepting that fact, that the locus of control is really just within your behaviors, your voluntary behaviors.
This is can be a very difficult thing for people to accept, right?
I think most people have a difficult time accepting that.
And I think it's important for us to point out that this is not something that you're expected to do entirely by yourself.
Oh, absolutely not. It's something that you have to learn and train yourself to remember that the only way to live a life that is based in reality is to accept that most things are not within your control. Now, that doesn't mean, well, let's forget doing anything. That's not true either. You want to be able to plan well for your future, for your present. However, trying to manipulate and control the environment, control behaviors of other people, control your own emotions and what type of thoughts you have is going to be unproductive.
And to close this out here, it's very important that we let people know that there really is treatment for this.
Absolutely. Cognitive behavior therapy, and more specifically, exposure and response prevention therapy, is the evidence-based treatment for OCD and anxiety disorders.
And if people want some resources where they can go for more stuff about OCD, more questions, well, first of all, they can write to us. But in the meantime, where can they go?
They can also go to the International OCD Foundation's website, which is iocdf.org. And they can also go to the Anxiety and Depression Association of America's website, which is ADAA.org. And lastly, they can also go into the Association for Behavior and Cognitive Therapies organization, which is ABCT.org. And all of these are nonprofit national organizations for anxiety disorders, depression, obsessive compulsive disorder, and cognitive behavior therapy.
Great. And thank you so much for taking us on this journey into the world of OCD. I think we've really covered, you know, nearly all the bases, if not all. And, you know, I think
we can never cover everything. That's certainty.
that is certainty. But I think we've just shown that this is just such an incredibly complicated disorder.
It is.
That really gets into everything and it really is so all encompassing. So you've really done an amazing job of helping us unpack it and make it a lot clearer. So
thank you.
And we're excited to have you back for season 3.
Wow, I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, thanks so much. Thank you for listening to the Stressless Life Podcast. You can join the discussion and find more information at thestresslesslifepodcast.com. Please write to us with questions and comments at podcast@thestresslesslife.com. Until next time, stay stressless.